Okay, plant friends, although this episode is about developing your soil, in-ground gardening, all sorts of fun tips, it's actually not really an episode about gardening. This is an episode about plant friendship and the magic of plant people connecting in real life. I am so excited to introduce you to my newest plant friend IRL, Melody. Maybe you've seen little glimpses of Melody on my Instagram. Over the last few months, I've kept my relationship with her a little bit private as we just kind of become friends and cultivate land together for the first time. Melody is a local gardener who lives about 15 minutes away from me in my new home in the Catskills. And Melody has one of the most unbelievable gardens I have ever seen in terms of beauty, in terms of ingenuity, in terms of creativity, and in terms of just plantiness, man. She has turned her backyard into a whimsical garden oasis, including a gazebo, a greenhouse, every different flower and plant you could really think of, all sorts of different stonework and tiers. It's truly such a special place. And plant friends, her soil is alive. I've learned about soil and soil science in all of these courses. I've understood how soil is a living, changing thing. But man, that concept that I have intellectually understood, I am now viscerally, physically understanding through touching and interacting with Melody's soil that she has cultivated over many years. It is a living, evolving, amazing thing. And I'm so excited that she's on the show today to share her tips. Her garden is truly paradise, and I'm so excited to be gardening with her this summer. We will tell you more about that later in the episode. Today, we share the story of how we met and started growing together. And Melody gives us her best tips on how to develop your own fantastic, nutrient-rich soil for in-ground gardening, if that is what you are interested in. I'm so excited to introduce you to my newest plant friend, IRL Plant Friends. So welcome to episode 126 of Bloom and Grow Radio. You hear that slurping, plant friends? That is me on my dregs of my daily dose of greens, courtesy of today's sponsor, Equilibria. Equilibria is a woman-owned wellness brand with unique science-backed products that help bring your mind and body back into harmony. I always have loved green juice and greens powders. Obviously, I love plants. I love growing plants. I love eating plants. Plants are good for you. And I have tried most greens powders brands on the market, honestly, at this point. I have to say, I'm really loving the Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens. I might argue it's probably one of the best tasting greens powders I've ever had, and that says a lot because I've tried most of them. The Equilibria Daily Nutri-Greens contains an immune antioxidant and detox blend along with prebiotics, probiotics, and over 35 fruits and veggies. There's no way I'm eating 35 fruits and vegetables throughout the day, but I love that I'm getting little doses and the micronutrients that are in each of the different veggies and fruits, right? Plus, they're certified organic, which I love. A lot of the competitors are not. I just mix one scoop of the greens powder into my water every day, and I'm shocked at how delicious this powder tastes. It's kind of like apple juice. I started back on the greens powder bandwagon because this spring, in this like season of rejuvenation, I'm kind of rejuvenating, doing an overhaul of my health. I've returned to my workout routine. I'm getting in more sleep. I've recommitted to my morning practice, and I've made this Equilibria Nutri-Greens part of that morning practice, drinking the powder in water in the morning. Plus, I love a female-founded company, right? Don't we all? If you want to try this greens powder, Equilibria is hooking you up with 15% off. Head to myeq.com and use code BLOOM for 15% off Equilibria's daily Nutri-Greens and so many other different products on their website. That's myeq.com and use code BLOOM at checkout for 15% off site-wide today. Plant friends, I hope you've had beautifully planty weeks. Oh my goodness gracious. We are like fully in spring right now, and it's magical, and I feel like I'm seeing the Catskills come alive, like the nature in the Catskills come alive, and therefore feel internally like myself coming alive. It's this really amazing experience after a bit of hibernation. So hello! Man, I'm so excited to finally introduce our podcast community of listeners to Melody. Melody has been a friend that I have been getting to know since January privately, and now she's kindly agreed to come and educate our whole community in addition to me. She's a real special lady. But before we do that, I just wanted to say thank you so much to our newest Patreon supporters, Amy and Daniel. You guys are the best. I'm so appreciative of our community of Patreon supporters for helping me bring the show to as many ears as possible around the world. Okay, backstory for how I knew Melody. When I moved to the Catskills, I was way in over my head on planting my first garden, not only because I had never really done outdoor gardening, as you guys have gotten to know in the My First Garden series on the podcast, but I really had no concept of the wildlife up here. And I didn't know how to garden. I got really nervous and kind of intimidated by the idea of gardening in such a rural area. So I went on nextdoor.com. I put out a call to action asking if there were any local gardeners that would connect with me, and Melody called me. Over the last few months, Melody has been giving me advice, picking up the phone, coaching me throughout my original garden plans, and ultimately offered me her greenhouse to start my seeds. I had been going through this whole seed starting journey, and it was super generous of her to allow me to kind of up-level my experience in her greenhouse as opposed to just a few grow lights in my house. We started cultivating our friendship there, and then, unfortunately, I've had a sudden change of circumstances, and Billy and I need to move unexpectedly in the middle of the summer, which means that my plans for my first garden has been put on hold, which has been rather devastating, plant friends. You all know because you've been with me for the last few months doing all of this research and planning and designing my first garden. But I know that I have a lifetime of gardening ahead of me, and that when one door closes, another door opens. And that has been this friendship with Melody. So when my circumstances changed, Melody offered for me to simply continue growing in her prolific garden and help her through her gardening season and learn from her. So we are going to be growing together this summer. And when you are on my Instagram and you see the gardening projects that I'm doing, you're actually taking a visit to Melody's garden oasis, which is so magical. Melody has been so generous with me with her time and her knowledge and her plant friendship. Man, this is a true plant friendship. And if you've been an OG listener of the podcast, you'll remember years back when I launched hashtag Plant Friends IRL, which is all about encouraging real plant friendships, whether they're online, whether you're taking them online and moving them in person, or whether you're just simply meeting other plant people around you in person and cultivating real life friendships. And that's what this has been. And in a somewhat difficult time in my personal life, everything's fine. Billy and I are great, but we're just in a big transition in life. Melody has been a constant and intensely generous with her time and knowledge and garden and plants. And I'm so freaking excited to introduce you guys to her. So before we dive into this conversation, Melody and I kind of talk about how we met. And then she has been, like I said, cultivating this unbelievable earth, ground, soil in her. And she has such interesting strategies and tips. She's also just a really interesting lady and gives us a bunch of gardening tips for anybody who might be curious to do in-ground gardening. I really hope you enjoy the lesson. I just wanted to give a quick shout out. They're not a sponsor of today's episode, but I just wanted to thank Territorial Seed Company. My partnership with them this gardening season is really what inspired me to kind of dive deep into seed starting, because they are my high quality seed provider. And it's through these seeds that I actually connected with Melody. And it's through her offering me her greenhouse and me bringing my little tomato seedlings to her greenhouse and, you know, showing up to care for my seedlings in her greenhouse, which then has slowly kind of evolved to me helping her with her garden. Like, those seeds are really truly the foundation of our friendship. So I just wanted to give a little shout out to Territorial Seed Company. If you've been listening to the podcast, you've heard me talk about them many times. I'll give their discount code and link in the show notes in case any of you guys need seeds. You should definitely check them out. But thank you to the power of seeds and growing for fostering this very sweet friendship. So without further ado, plant friends, meet Melody. Welcome to Bloom and Grow Radio, Melody.
Hi, nice to be here. Hi, folks.
I'm so excited to finally introduce you. I feel like on my Instagram, sometimes people have seen you, but I've alluded to this relationship that's blossomed, and I'm excited to finally introduce you to the listeners. So welcome. For those listening, we're actually sitting in the gazebo in Melody's garden, so you might hear the rooster, the attack rooster.
And his foul bunch of chickens.
Yes. One of the funniest things when I was first visiting Melody, you sent me a text and you said, beware of the attack rooster. And yes. I was like, what does that mean? So funny. So Melody, before we dive into, you have probably the most amazing soil I've ever experienced. I'm excited to ask you about your soil and how you've built it up. But before that, I wanted to share our very sweet story of plant friendship and how we met. I had moved up here, city girl, quite displaced, and learned that we were in deer and bear country. And so I wanted to give a little shout out to nextdoor.com, but I posted on nextdoor.com asking if there were any local gardeners who would be open to talking to me about what I need to know about gardening up here, because it's very different than my little balcony garden. And you immediately responded, asked for my phone number, and called me. And who calls people anymore, you know?
Yes, I do.
So on a Sunday, you called me and I think we talked for about an hour. I remember Billy came out into the living room and was like, who are you just talking to? What were you just talking about? And I was like, I don't know. This nice woman just called me and coached me about it. So I just think that's been very sweet. What was your experience talking to me for the first time and all the crazy questions I asked you?
Happy to help you.
So
I like mentoring people.
Yeah.
You all need to know how to grow more food and be more self-sustaining.
Totally. And I got to learn your history on that first call. So do you want to share? You have a really rich horticultural background in over decades. So how have you kind of gotten to be the plant lady that you are today?
Well, I grew up on a homestead. So we had a lot of fruit trees and berry bushes, grapes and gooseberries and currant bushes, peach, pear trees, plum trees, apple trees, crab apple trees. And not too much in the way of vegetables, but mostly cutting flowers. Mm-hmm. So I ended up going to work when I was a teenager for a large nursery. And we grew shrubs and trees and did cuttings and root cuttings to make more trees and flowering plants. And I also worked in the greenhouses, of which we had many, growing cutting flowers in the greenhouse. And I learned the way to keep them straight, growing straight up, was to do a grid of string across the beds.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So when they grew up, they stood up straight instead of flopping over. That was interesting. It would look kind of weird in the garden. But anyway, in the greenhouse, it did work. I also worked in the greenhouse growing starts for vegetables and herbs and cutting flowers and perennials. And also worked in the floral end of the business, too, making floral arrangements. So I learned a lot of flower plants that people liked for weddings and things like that, and learned how to make wedding plants and
corsages. This is super young, right?
Teenager.
Yeah.
For several years. And then I ended up with going to college for a horticultural degree and learned about soil sciences and parasites that affect plants and pests and diseases and nutrients that plants need and every kind of plant you can imagine, from houseplants to vegetables to berry bushes to fruit trees to flowers and vegetables. So, and then from there, I went on and I actually ended up growing 5 acres of vegetables. And I started a CSA, which is Community Supported Agriculture, in 1989 and grew food for 200 families.
That's wild.
And then last year, I had my own garden, which is about 60 by 60. I grew food for 16 families.
Out of your backyard.
Out of my backyard.
Yeah. Amazing. Right?
Well, last year was the big COVID virus thing that happened, and there was a big food shortage scare, and people were grabbing food from the grocery store shelves, and markets had, at least up where I am, they had bare shelves, and there was not a lot of anything going on. So I got worried about my friends, and I said, I want to help feed not only my own family, but I want to feed my friends. So I started the CSA. And immediately got 16 families to sign up.
It's amazing. So, yeah. And kept you busy in this period of social distancing, growing that much food, that much garden.
Yeah. And I also was the vice president of the Northeast Organic Farmers Association. That's NOFA, New York. And put on the first organic farming conference at Cornell University in 1989 in March.
Wow.
So it opened the eyes to the agribusiness, to the pros of growing organically, which is what people have been doing for eons of centuries and centuries and thousands of years have been growing organically. And agribusiness is relatively new guy on the block, using mechanization and a lot of chemical fertilizers and pesticides and herbicides. And it's toxified the soil and poisoned the water systems.
Yeah. It's time to return back to what we were supposed to be doing this whole time.
Yeah. When I went to Italy, I loved Italy because instead of having grassy lawns, every square inch of their land was cultivated and growing all kinds of vegetables and tomatoes and olive trees and lemons and tomatoes. And the food in Italy was just superb. Absolutely superb. When you can grow it your own, pick it and take it in and cook it or eat it raw, there's no comparison to what you buy in the grocery store, which may be weeks or months old when you finally get it.
Totally.
And what nutrition is left in it.
Billy was just here when he dropped me off to visit you and he had a piece of your lettuce and he said, if everybody could eat lettuce plucked straight out of the earth, no one would be fat because it really does taste so different. And it's really true, especially for me with lettuces, because we grew hydroponically this winter. And man, having fresh lettuce versus what you buy in the store, which, like you said, is old, there's such a different flavor profile and texture. Like, it's so much crisper and crunchier. It's way more tasty.
Yeah. Well, you figure what they pick, let's say, in California or Costa Rica has to be shipped.
Right.
And it sits in a warehouse.
Yeah.
And then it gets trucked. to a central location where it's distributed out of, and then it's trucked again.
Yeah.
And then it gets to the grocery store and it sits on the grocery store shelf for however long before you buy it. So you could be buying lettuce that's 2 weeks old.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah.
So.
And you only know, it's wild too, waking up to that, because you kind of just only think that that's what's available to you. You only think, I can only get my lettuce from the store. And then you realize, no, I can grow some lettuce. I have to learn how to do it. But that's a very interesting awakening as well, is waking up to kind of the fog that we've all been in regarding our food, for sure.
Well, one of the issues that I find with agribusiness is that the cost of putting fertilizers, chemical fertilizers, is astronomical to a farmer. Mm-hmm. And they're big agribusiness money, and they're trying to make a big profit, which means don't spend a lot of money and grow food and get it to the marketplace as quickly as possible. And they get down to the point where they're adding the macronutrients to the soil, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, maybe sulfur, and some other macronutrients, but they're not adding any of the micronutrients. So molybdenum and all the trace elements that we need. There's 16 different nutrients, and they're basically adding 3, 4, or 5.
Yeah.
And the soil gets depleted every year through cultivation, and eventually whatever micronutrients were in the soil get eaten up by the plants, and then there's no more, and they don't replenish it. And you are what you eat. And if it's not in the soil, it's not in the plants.
Yeah.
And so why are people sick? Because they don't get enough of the nutrients they need.
And I'm so excited to talk to you more about soil, because I have only grown, in my experience, in containers. I've had guests who are raised bed experts on the show, but I've never had an in-ground expert. So I guess, how have you gotten this amazing in-ground garden that you've built? Like, what have been the steps that you've taken to have all of this lush greenery around you?
Well, my soil is anywhere for probably about a foot deep of really good organic matter. Manures, I've had horses for 6 years and composted the manure. The one problem with horse manure is it brings a lot of weed seeds in, because food goes through their gastrointestinal system quickly. Whereas cow manure is much better, because they masticate it and they burp it up and they chew on it again, and they chew their cud, basically. And it breaks down a lot of the weed seeds. So their manure is much preferred. But farmers who are raising cattle will also just spread it on the fields, because they want to put nutrients back out on their fields so they can grow good food for the cattle to eat. So,
and how long have you been in this garden, cultivating this land?
Since the early 90s.
Okay. Since the early 90s. So
it's 20-something years, 25, 28 years I've been gardening.
Damn. And that's why it's so deep. So the soil is so deep. I mean, really, when you are moving it around, it moves so easily, because it's all just that dark brown, what do they call it? Gold.
It's friable.
Yeah, it's amazing. So in your year one, I mean, I know a lot of people have moved this year. A lot of people are super interested in gardening for the first time this year. What did your year one look like in terms of cultivating your soil here?
All right. I would say that for anybody starting, dig up a handful of soil and feel it. Put it in the palm of your hand and crunch your palm together like you're making a fist.
Okay.
And then open your hand. And if the soil just sits there in a lump, it means you've got clay in the soil.
Okay.
Then take your thumb and push on the lump. And if it falls apart, that's a good sign.
Okay.
If it doesn't fall apart, it means you got a lot of clay, which has issues. Clay is like a bunch of plates. If you wash dishes and then just stack the dishes up, there'd be water in between the plates, and it would take a long time for the water to dry out.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's why they use clay for modeling, because when you push on it, it slides. So if you had a stack of plates and you pushed on the top plate, the plate would slide right off the top of the other plates. And if you kept on doing it, they'd also slide off. And that's what clay soil is. It's platelets, little microscopic platelets that slide when you push on them. That's why people work with clay and do pottery and ceramics with it. And clay has an ability to hold water. But when it's holding water, it doesn't have any ability to hold oxygen. And roots, believe it or not, need oxygen to breathe.
Yes, they do. 25%, right? Your soil is supposed to be...
What, oxygen?
Yeah, right?
Well, if you have clay soil, just exclusively clay, you basically have very little oxygen.
Yeah, totally.
And roots need the oxygen. And the other problem with clay is that when it does dry out, it cracks. So if you've got plants growing in soil that dries out and it cracks, it's going to crack and break the roots too. So adding organic matter, compost, to the clay soil is imperative.
Yeah.
And even if you have to truck in a load of composted soil and mix it in, really mix it in well, you'd be well advised.
How do you mix it?
turn it over, turn it over, turn it over.
So you turn, if you've got super clay compacted soil, you like get your, I don't know what tool, but like you turn it over and then you put the compost on it and then you turn it more to mix it in.
Keep mixing, just like mixing, making bread or something.
Okay.
You know, mixing your ingredients together.
Okay.
So one basic type of soil is clay. Mm-hmm. Another is silt.
Okay.
And silt is usually a product of streams mm-hmm. having been at a higher level as they erode and work their way down into the ground. And silty soil, so when you get that handful of soil from your garden and you determine if you have clay and how much is clay.
Okay.
Then you want to rub your fingertips together with your thumb. And if it feels like talcum powder, mm-hmm. that means it's silt. Silt is a very, very fine soil.
Okay.
All right. And the third one is sand. Mm-hmm. And sand you can know because you rub the soil between your fingertips and you can feel the grit. And sand can be all different sizes, from very fine to pretty coarse.
Okay.
And of course, if you live in the Catskills like we do, rocks are a big part of your soil.
Oh my God, so many rocks. All the rocks.
So many rocks. And if you're trying to grow carrots and you have a lot of rocks in that carrot bed, you're going to grow very short or very crooked mm-hmm. carrots. So if you make a carrot bed, you want to have it pretty soil, stone free. Mm-hmm. Pebbles are okay, but anything bigger than an inch or bigger, you know, you want to sort of move them out of that bed.
Okay.
So the basic three components, clay, silt, and sand. If you have equal parts of all, that's called loam, and that's ideal.
Right.
Because the sand helps to aerate and drain the mm-hmm. water. It helps aerate the soil and drain the water. The silt interacts with the clay and sand and makes a little binder, and it also frees up the clay a little bit.
Okay.
It tempers the solidified mm-hmm. clay. But you could have clay. You could have a clay loam, which means you have mostly clay mm-hmm. and you have some amount of either silt or sand or both. Mm-hmm. You could have silty loam, which means it's loam with silt with some clay and some mm-hmm. sand. And you could have sandy loam, which means you have mostly sand, but there's some clay and there's some silt in it. And all of those are okay. Mm-hmm. But you don't want clay soil 100%. You don't want silt soil 100%. You don't want sand soil. The thing with sand is if you had a jar of pebbles, of marbles, mm-hmm. and you put water, the water would just drain right through the marbles very quickly. And that's what sandy soil does. You'd have to be watering your garden daily mm-hmm. if you have sandy soil. So you need to mix organic matter in it to act as little sponges, mini mm-hmm. sponges in between the sand. And organic matter, compost, manure, anything.
Okay.
I have a big compost pile. My compost is probably 6 feet wide by about 2.5-3 feet tall at this point.
Yeah, we've been throwing weeds in it all week.
Right. So working on your soil, you are what you eat and plants are what they eat. So if your soil's not right, guess what? Your plants aren't going to be right for mm-hmm. you either. So paying more attention to what's going on down below the surface of the soil mm-hmm. is very important.
Thank you, Espoma Organic, for sponsoring today's episode, Plant Friends. We know Espoma are my ride or die, tried and true soil, fertilizer, pest control providers. They're an amazing family-owned and operated company dedicated to making safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and the planet. We know I love their potting mix and cactus mixes for my houseplants, but they literally have a mix for every type of plant you own, indoor or outdoor, no matter how you garden. So if it's indoors, it's using their all-purpose potting mix, their succulent mix, their orchid mix, their African violet mix. Or if you're doing outdoor gardening this summer, they make high quality organic raised bed mixes, seed starter mix, garden bed soil, and garden amendments. Interestingly enough, Melody actually mentioned that she's been using Espoma in her garden for years. The other day I was over and she had Espoma Garden Tone available without even knowing that Espoma was my sponsor to prep a new bed that we were making in her garden. And we're also going to be using their land and sea compost in her garden as well. I'm also doing a separate container garden to take with me in my move in the middle of the summer. So you know I'm going to be using their potting mix and their tomato tone for my tomatoes to make sure that my tomato babies are being set up for success because they're all I care about. So to learn more about the amazing indoor and outdoor gardening products that Espoma Organic has to offer, visit Espoma.com to find your local Espoma dealer or click the link in the show notes to visit my Espoma Amazon storefront. Thank you, Deer Busters, for sponsoring today's episode. Plant friends, if you're struggling with deer and wildlife in your gardens in the growing season, I highly consider you thinking about a deer fence. You can go back to the episode on managing garden wildlife for more information on that. But the easiest way to keep deer and wildlife from munching on your salads and collard greens and tomatoes is a wildlife fence. And Deer Busters makes that easy with their fencing kits. Oh my God, plant friends, we've talked about this in this episode, but man, I really didn't know what I was getting into. To to as a gardener trying to garden up here. And I love deer. I love the wildlife up here, but I'm not interested in sharing my garden harvests with the local wildlife. So enter Deer Busters. They make these easy to install fencing kits that solve this problem. I'm not handy. I don't really know how to install things, but Deer Busters puts everything you need to install the kit in the kit that you buy. No fancy hardware or contractors required. And the kits are customizable by linear feet, corners, ends, gates, tensioning. You can even add rodent barriers. I love that you can add a gate, which I think is kind of fun and whimsical. So if you are in the market for a deer fence, head on over to deerbusters.com today to protect your plants tomorrow and use code BLOOM at checkout for 10% off. Once again, that's code BLOOM at checkout for 10% off at deerbusters.com. First, when you have your new property, you've got to assess what you've got. And I know that you can reach out to your local government extension and even have your soil tested if, like, you're not quite sure.
Well, that's advised every year.
Yeah, because you also want to make sure that you don't have any toxicity in your soil, because depending on where you live, that's a real issue, especially if you're trying to cultivate New York City. I couldn't believe I took a soil science course in 2020 when I was living in New York City, and I couldn't believe how toxic the soil is there, but due to like so many things. So you assess that soil and then you make a plan to amend if you need to amend. So if you've got your sand, you're adding in organic matter. If you've got your clay, you're adding in sand to kind of get that perfect.
Well, no, you don't want to add sand to clay without organic matter.
With organic matter.
Because clay and sand make concrete.
Aha. Okay.
If you add sand, you better add a lot of organic matter.
Okay.
Otherwise, you're going to have a hard pan situation.
Got it. So what would you say your garden is here?
It's loam.
Perfect.
It's clay and loam. I actually don't have sand in my soil. It's basically a clay loam, a silty clay loam. And a lot of organic matter from having horses for many years and adding their manure. But I also got a lot of weeds, which are a chronic issue. And I run my hoe. I have a collinear hoe. And if you don't have a collinear hoe, you need to go buy one from Elliot Coleman.
What is that?
It's a long handle. You can get them in the lengths that are appropriate for your height, which is nice. So if you're a short person, you can get a shorter handle. If you're a tall person, you can get a tall one. And it has a blade, and you can change the blades. You can buy new replacement blades with a nut and bolt. You just add two nuts and bolts. And it has a sharp edge, which you can sharpen just like you would sharpen knives with a whetstone or, you know, your kitchen sharpening tool. And I run it through the soil at least once a week, even though there doesn't seem to be any weeds growing, because when a weed seed hatches and sprouts, it sends down its first little root. And then after the root is established, which you don't see happening because it's all below the soil, two little leaves come up, which are called cotyledons, which are the first solar panels. And their job is to grow a bigger root system. And when that happens, you're almost losing the battle right from the get-go. You don't want to wait till you see the weed seeds being grown into big plants, because then it's a lot of work.
Okay.
So you want to knock them back as quickly as possible. And there are weed seeds in the soil right under the surface, 2 inches down, 3 inches down, 4 inches down, six inches down. And as the soil temperature is warm, more and more of the weed seeds at different heights will sprout.
Okay.
So weeds are continually showing up.
So you got to be constantly monitoring them.
Every week.
So okay.
I run the collinear hoe through the top inch of the soil and just knock off the heads of the new shoots and save the weeding, big weeding process until I get bored with gardening back in August. And then I have to pull weeds. But at least I get to be pretty weed-free for the most of the season.
So in your first year, were you gardening your first year, or were you just tending to the soil your first year? Like,
was,
for a beginning gardener, do you advise that, or do you advise just trying to build up the earth?
I had raised beds the first year.
Okay.
And I had done some terracing, so I had taken some of the soil from the terraces and put them in the raised beds and then added manure, because I had horses. And compost, and brought in and bought soil to soil amendments, rather, and grew some great stuff the first year.
Oh, that's amazing.
I actually have pictures of that, too.
Oh, we can include them in the show notes.
Okay.
And also, Melody is going to give us a tour of her garden on YouTube, so make sure you go watch the YouTube channel and watch the video, because I think I could try and describe this magical place for 45 minutes in myself and still never actually capture how special it is.
Yeah. Well, it's been a very strange spring.
It's been very
cold, very windy. We've had 60-mile-an-hour winds many, many days, and
we've
that dehydrates
animals
plants.
Eating our seeds.
Yeah, we had mice, white-footed mice in the greenhouse, digging up and eating the zinnia seeds and everything
so
else.
So frustrating. We worked so hard for those zinnias.
And peas. They
and
ate all
peas.
The peas.
All of our peas. Thank God we have a lot of pea seeds. Okay, so step one is start amending your soil. And then what has the life of your soil looked like over the last several decades? So the first year you did raised beds. Now, what about it? You were telling me the other day, how do you keep enriching your soil? You were saying that you like throw weeds in the path and stamp them down. Like, how do you kind of organically keep things going?
It's called sheet composting. In other words, I dig up the soil, of which I've got very deep, beautiful black gold, I call it, and make raised beds, but not with forms. I don't put wood forms around them because every year I kind of change the format of the garden because it's an art form too for me, and change the design of where the beds are. And then so there's a deep ravine in between each bed. And then if there are weeds or leaves or any organic matter, I just throw them in the paths. Up until now, I've been throwing them in a big pile, but I'm soon going to be putting them and filling up all the beds, the paths between the beds with them, right up to the surface of the beds. And that does several things. One, it becomes a place for all kinds of beings to live. And we do need, gardens do need insects. And when you spray your garden with pesticides, you're killing a lot of beneficials as well as obnoxious pests. So that's not healthy for you, and it's not healthy for the plants or the good bugs. Also, worms will work their way through that. It also acts as a good aquifer for holding moisture so that the sides of the beds don't dry out.
Okay.
So that when you water the bed and the bed gets watered.
Okay.
And it doesn't just drain into an empty path. So if it drains at all, it drains into this mulch that's laying in the paths, and it acts like a big aquifer, just holds the water for you.
Well, and we were working on this big patch of your beds, and you had the beds basically perpendicular to what you had us change them to this year. So because those paths then became the beds, that soil keeps getting turned around, which is a really interesting idea. So what about someone who's beginning and needs to figure out what kind of beds they want to make? Like, how do you design an in-ground garden?
Well, just be artistic. Look for a place that has the most sun.
Go out, figure out where the sun's rising and setting.
Go out into your yard in the early morning and see where the sun hits. Go out again mid-morning, noon, mid-afternoon, and late afternoon before it gets dark. And find the spot. You can mark it with stakes and sort of delineate where it gets the most hours of sun, because that's crucial, especially for growing herbs and vegetables and cutting flowers. Some perennials will grow in the shade as well, but vegetables like sun. So I would find that place in your yard and then say, this is where I'm going to have my garden. And start small, maybe, so it's more rewarding. Once you start growing anything, you'll find that the garden is too small and you want to expand it every year. And my garden was much, much smaller. My garden was right here where we're sitting right now. This was the garden from that end to that end.
Right.
And there was nothing up there. That was just trees and wild stuff. And over the years, I took down trees and built stone, bluestone raised beds, and actually had a 48-foot greenhouse up at the top level, which I used to have raised. I've developed raised beds in. If you were to dig down in this beautiful black soil, you'd come to a layer that's just yellow clay.
Okay.
Orange yellow clay. So you can see, if you want to dig down, you could do that and find out just how deep the soil is and how incredible it is. So you need to feed your soil every year, though. You should always put a top layer of compost on in the fall.
Okay.
And just top dress it with 2 or 3 inches, and even do that around plants midsummer.
Really? So then that compost, the fall, winter, and spring kind of works its way into the soil and then kind of feeds it for the next growing season.
Right. And one of the things that I'll often do for things like tomatoes and peppers, heavy feeders, squash plants of different kinds, winter and summer squash, is when I dig a hole to plant the transplants into or to plant seeds, I dig out about an 8-inch by 8-inch hole and I fill it with compost.
Oh, just pure compost.
Pure compost. Okay. And then mix some of the side soil in that I had dug out in with the compost and plant in that. So I'm putting compost right where it needs to be, under the foot of the plants.
Okay. And then that plant, because it's a heavy feeder, just has a higher concentration of nutrients.
Good, good
in that,
food.
In that area. Oh, that's so interesting.
Food for food.
Yeah, food for food. I love that. You have some just in-ground beds, but we're planting most of the food. You do kind of make a raised bed of soil that doesn't have wood around it. Do you have recommended like widths and lengths for people that are starting out? Or to you, is it more of an eyeball type thing?
Yeah, the length doesn't really matter. It's the width. And if you make the beds too wide, it's very hard to get to the middle of the bed without falling into them. So most of mine are about 30 inches wide, 36. And beds where I'm going to have squash need to be wider because they squash grows over a lot of land.
Yeah.
I'm going to be planting the squash this year so that when they grow, they're going to be heading over toward growing into and under a lot of butterfly bushes.
Love
so
that.
The butterfly bushes can act as a trellis.
Oh, that's so smart. And the ultimate pollinator attractor.
Right. So it works both ways. So putting pollinating plants, attractant plants into your garden is a very good thing to do too.
And you were talking about how you like to interplant together. You've advised me my new favorite plant is sweet alyssum because it attracts those
parasitic wasps.
Parasitic wasps.
Which are very tiny. They're like an eighth of an inch in size. There's palisades, brocknut wasps, trichogramma wasps. And those wasps don't hurt you. They don't sting you. They don't bother you. They may, if you have perfume or hairspray, they may come and check you out because you smell good. But they lay eggs in caterpillars. So if you have cabbage moths or tomato hornworms, right, they lay their eggs in those. So because they're so tiny, they can't pollinate most flowers, like cultivated annual flowers that you use for cutting are too big. They'd fall in, basically. So sweet alyssum is wonderful because it's a very small flower and they can drink to their heart's content. And each plant is profuse with flowers. So I find that we need to learn to get along together, not just with each other as people, but also to learn to study and know about nature and learn how to get along and how to encourage beneficials, because there are a lot of insects that are beneficial and helpful to us. And when we get to know them, we make them our friends.
Yeah.
And we put things in our garden to attract them. So we can all live harmoniously together.
You once shared with me, I'm a little bit scared of bees, but you once shared with me that if there's a bee near you, that you just start to hum on their pitch, like on their low bee pitch, and just let them know that you're cool and the bee won't bother you if you kind of get on their level.
Well, what happens with a lot of people, like a yellow jacket will come up to a person. More than a honeybees don't tend to bother people. But yellow jackets and white-faced hornets and things may. And especially if you have, if you're out in the garden and you've got some kind of sweet smelling spray, perfume, hairspray on, they may come over and check you out because you smell so good. And then you get scared and you start flailing your arms around trying to like kill them and swish them away, and you get wild and erratic and you become aggressive and then they come after you. But if you were to stand very still and just breathe normally and not get hysterical, you won't release your own pheromones that are saying, I'm mean, I'm going to hate you, I'm going to kill you. And just let them buzz right up and check you out. I've let them land on me. And I just talk to them in a nice voice and say, hi, how are you? And they eventually leave because they say, I'm a pretty flower, but I have no honey, so no nectar.
Go find someplace else.
So we have to learn to coexist.
I love that.
With people, too.
Totally. We have so many lessons to learn.
Because we're all people.
Yeah.
We all eat. We all shit. We all pee.
Exactly. You heard it here first.
You know, we all eat the same kinds of foods, maybe different in different countries, but we all have the same senses, five senses. We all have the same bone structure, the same internal system.
Yeah.
So we're all the same. We may have different colors of skin and we may have different shaped eyes and faces, but we're basically all human beings on this planet and we need to learn to get along.
Absolutely. And I feel like plants can teach you so much there, you know? They're all different, but they're all doing the same thing, essentially, photosynthesizing. Any final thoughts for any beginner in-ground gardeners? Anything else to watch out for?
Well, one thought is when you look at a seed packet, they'll say plant the lettuce, let's say 12 inches apart, in rows 3 feet apart.
Okay.
Well, that's based on machine cultivation. Because the tires have to have space and the cultivators need to have space to run down the long beds in hundreds of acres of fields.
And that's funny. A bee just buzzed over here
I saw that conversation. I just saw it come by. Went to the petunias that I've got here ready to transplant. So if you can plant it 12 inches apart in a row, you can plant it 12 inches apart the other way, which is kind of called square foot gardening. Like I grow broccoli 18 inches apart and then I plant a lettuce plant in between each plant.
Okay.
So I intercrop because the lettuce grows near to the ground. It shades the ground, which keeps the ground cooler, which lettuce likes and broccoli likes. So it shades the ground for the broccoli plants. It also helps to keep weed seeds down, too, because it's covering the ground and they don't get any, the weeds don't get any sun. So eventually the harvest of the lettuce is taken long before the plant, the broccoli plant is big enough and would shade the lettuce. And shading the lettuce isn't bad because lettuce doesn't want to grow in the hot sun in the middle of the summer. So the broccoli can help. You can even do a second planting of lettuce after you harvest it. So I do that with a lot of plants, intercrop things.
Okay. You know. In the ground. Yeah. So beholden to whatever the seed packet says in terms of spacing.
Right. If it says 6 inches apart, plant it 6 inches apart in all directions.
Well, that's interesting, too, because it causes you or forces you to get curious about the root systems of the plants and learning what root systems are shallow versus what are deeper and how you can interplant them. Any books that you recommend beginning gardeners to read?
Mine, if I ever wrote it.
I know. I'd read that book.
I would recommend that you dig up one plant of every variety that you grow and examine its root system late in the season.
Great
maybe,
advice.
Maybe before frost or at the frost time and see exactly how the roots grow because the roots are important. Mm-hmm. The roots are what gives you what's above the ground. Mm-hmm. So if you understand that you could intercrop things that have long roots with things that have shallow roots. Mm-hmm. So sweet alyssum has pretty shallow roots, so I interplant them with a lot of my vegetables.
Yeah.
For many reasons. Mm-hmm. Because they're pretty and because they're pollinating plants. And they spread out and shade the ground, so it causes less weed seeds to sprout, too.
Mm-hmm. I love that. How frequently are you weeding throughout the summer? Every day?
I run the collinear hoe through the garden.
Oh, right. Okay, cool. Well, this was a great little 101 kind of thought. I'm very excited to be gardening with you this summer. As fate has it, I won't be doing my own garden this summer. I'm going to be kind of apprenticing with you in your garden this summer. I'm super excited.
And she's a wonderful apprentice. And pretty, too.
I'm having so much fun learning from you, and I'm very touched by our plant friendship. So hopefully Melody will join us throughout this growing season. We can update. So at this moment, what's going on in your garden? You just planted a flower bed. That looks gorgeous.
Yeah, I put a lot of perennials in. A
lot of perennials. We've got, which is great because they're going to be more low maintenance for you as the seasons change. We restructured
the vegetable
beds. They're all parallel. Please go check out the YouTube tour if you are so curious. But you've planted, while I was on vacation, onions, scallions.
Carrots, beets. Spinach, lettuce, arugula, broccoli, cabbages, different kinds of kale, kohlrabi, tatsoi, bok choy.
So the way Melody and I met, we met from our phone call. And then the way we started gardening together was I was looking for somewhere to start my seeds. She offered that I could start my seeds in her greenhouse. So now the greenhouse is really full. We've got tomatoes, zinnias, you've got peppers. We tried to start many of my seeds that got gobbled up by mice.
Look, a bumblebee.
Oh, look, a bumblebee.
And
look
at it.
It's got
pollen sacs on it.
Look at that.
I have some stock plants, annuals. Oh, I'm so glad to see some pollinators. It's been a strange spring because it's been very cold at night, down in the 30s.
So cold.
Next week, it's going to be in the 40s at night. So that'll be the time to plant a lot of other plants outside.
I'm ready. I'm ready for it to get warm.
I am too. I was looking at, we have 7 months of cold weather here.
Yeah,
it's a lot. In the Catskill Mountains.
It's a lot of cold weather.
I wish I could dig up my whole garden and move it further south.
I know.
Could take all the soil with me, all the hard
work
I've spent over the years building, you know.
I know. Oh my gosh. So stay posted. It's fun too, because you have a lot of like ferns that are kind of growing back and unfurling. You've got a lot of butterfly bushes and pollinators and all these irises.
And there's bumblebee on the ajuga over there too.
Oh yeah, this bumblebee keeps flying around.
Yeah, that's a good sign. I haven't seen many pollinators. I've seen a lot of wasps, paper wasps. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that paper wasps eat are they eat spiders.
Okay.
When they build their, or mud daubers, when they build their little mud dauber home, they put each chamber has one egg in it and they fill it with spiders and then close it off with clay.
Okay.
And keep building up with the mud and doing, each egg chamber has a bunch of stung, they sting the spiders. Mm-hmm. So they're alive, but they're kind of in suspended animation. So when the egg hatches, the larva has food to eat. It's alive, preserved. It's like a preservative.
Nature is amazing.
It's incredible.
Nature is amazing.
The forms of plants and insects are just phenomenal.
Yeah, truly. Well, we've got to get back into the garden. So until next time, I can't wait to see how the summer unfurls and what's growing. And I can't wait for it to get warm so we can really start seeing the rapid growth. So
the garden is calling.
The garden is calling.
And so, seeds are saying, plant me, plant me.
Exactly. They're beckoning to us and we've got limited time. So until next time, thank you so much for joining us and giving that little tutorial.
Happy spring, everybody.
Happy spring. thank you so much, Melody. Plant friends, I know I waxed poetic in the intro, but I just need to say again, I'm learning so much about plants from Melody. She's such a resource. She has so much knowledge. I truly just love that little tidbit she told me about the bees. I've been using it as we have a lot of bees buzzing around on our property too. But I'm learning about plants from her, but I'm also just learning about life from this whole experience. I'm learning that humans can be so good, that generosity still exists, that kindness still exists, that when one door closes, another one truly opens. Sometimes I think about the fact that maybe my garden was supposed to not work out just to go learn from Melody this summer, right? Like there's always an opportunity if you can look for it, no matter how much stress you're under. And man, the importance of letting go to attachments, trusting in the universe, trusting that the doors are opening and you just got to walk through them, right? I'm hoping that Melody gets to join us continually throughout the season. Definitely head over to the YouTube channel. We have a really fun video for you. I'm hoping that she'll grace us on the YouTube as well. And hopefully I will be documenting the process of the garden on the Instagram. So if you're interested in finding more about Melody, you can click all the links below so you can keep getting more of her little pearls of wisdom, pearls of gardening wisdom, especially the one at the end, how we're all human and that we've all got to grow together. Man, I freaking love that. And I freaking love her. So speaking of growing together, I'm so lucky to be growing alongside all of you, my sweet plant friends. And as always, I hope that you keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friend, thank you for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you're subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're there subscribing, why don't you click over to the review section and leave us a review? It would be tremendously helpful for the show. So thanks in advance. If you're looking for more planty content or ways to help and support the show or engage with our community, we've got a ton of options for you. So first, there's the free Bloom and Grow Plant Parent Personality Test. It is a super fun 3-minute test that I made for you that pairs you with your plant parent personality profile, where you'll learn your planty strengths and weaknesses and get a curated list of plants, projects, and podcast episodes that are right up your alley, tailored just for you. The test lives at bloomandgrowradio.com/personality, and you have to let me know what your results are on Instagram. You can find me on Instagram at Bloom and Grow Radio. If you're interested in supporting Bloom and Grow Radio, consider becoming a Patreon plant friend of the show. Patreon plant friends are members of the community who support the show monetarily on a monthly basis for as little as $4 a month, and these magical humans help support the show and bring our content to as many planty eyes and ears as possible. Once you join, you'll also get the secret password to our Facebook group, which I like to call the Plantiest Corner of the Internet. We have a lot of fun over there. You can become a Patreon plant friend at patreon.com/bloomandgrowradio. And of course, you can also just join our newsletter that I like to call the Garden Club. When you join our Garden Club, you'll receive a free download of the exclusive Molly Mansfield Keep Blooming print, which is so adorable. And I'll slide into your inboxes, usually only around twice a month, with plant care tips, recent episodes, and announcements. You can join at bloomandgrowradio.com/community. And for anything else, plant friends, I'm here for you. So feel free to drop me a line when you have an idea for an episode, an event, or maybe even if you're a planty business interested in sponsoring the show. Thanks again for listening. It is my honor and delight to help you keep blooming and keep growing. Friends, propagate knowledge and grow some freaking joy. That's the motto of the Growing Joy Garden Society app and platform, otherwise known as the Plantiest and Kindest Corner of the Internet. If you've been an OG listener or a longtime listener, you might also know this app and platform as the Bloom and Grow Garden Party, but with the rebrand, we've rebranded it to the Growing Joy Garden Society. No trolls allowed, kind plant friends only. And if you haven't heard about the society yet, Plant Friend, you got to join. It's my online community that you can access via iOS or Android app or on your computer that I built to connect our international community of plant friends so we can all nerd out together about plants and celebrate our passion for our beloved plant babies. We have members literally all over the world. I'm so in love with this community of sweet plant friends. I can't say enough amazing things about them. But also, there's a lot of really cool features about the app you might be interested in. There's dedicated hashtags to all sorts of different subsects of planty passions like houseplants, gardening, plant-inspired DIY projects, growing joy, plants and pets, and so many more. There's a plantrepreneur group, so if you're a planty entrepreneur and you want to connect with other planty entrepreneurs, you can join that group to connect and network. There's a plant swap section. Plus, the entire app, and this is my favorite part, is entirely searchable. So say you want to learn more about Hoya, you type the word Hoya into the search bar, and literally every post ever created about Hoya will pop up, so you can click in, see what other people have been posting about Hoya, and learn on your own and crowdsource hair information. It's so cool. But last but not least, it's an amazing way to support the show. Your monthly membership not only goes to sustaining the platform, but it also supports my team of editors, writers, and a community manager that help the world of Bloom and Grow keep growing. So come join us. All you got to do is go to jointhegardensociety.com and sign up for the community plan. Once again, you go to jointhegardensociety.com and click the community plan. Hot take, plant friends. There is no one right starter plant. There, I said it. And you know what? While I'm at it, there are also no real plant killers in the world. There are just people who have not figured out their right plants for their lifestyle. This is why I created the free Plant Parent Personality Test, because Plant Friend, I want you to get thriving alongside your houseplants as quickly as possible. So I made this cutie little Plant Parent Personality Quiz that's totally free for you on my website to take the guesswork out of building your plant collection effortlessly and joyfully. After speaking to thousands of members in our community, I realized that there are about five key plant parent personalities, each one with their unique set of strengths, weaknesses, and a unique set of plants that thrive under their care. For example, a mindful plant parent, someone who wants to engage with their plants daily, use them in their morning routines. If someone gifted that plant parent a succulent and they watered it every day, that succulent would die immediately. However, that drought-resistant succulent is a perfect match for a low-key plant parent, which is someone who travels, has kids, is busy, doesn't have time to engage with their plants every day. They're looking to engage with their plants more like once a week or once every couple of weeks. In addition, obviously, to understanding your light and basic plant care that we provide on this podcast, Happy Plant Parenthood is all about discovering your personality and then picking the right houseplants to go with it. It's that simple. No more stressing over your collection. So what plant parent personality type are you, plant friend? All you got to do to find out is take my free quiz on my website and let me know. You can access it at growingjoywithmaria.com/personality. After taking the test, you'll get an email with a list of plants, podcast episodes, and planty projects that I think would light you specifically up like a full spectrum grow light. So once again, that's growingjoywithmaria.com/personality for your free plant parent personality test results.